Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Loose Units Hot Stuff Coming Through, Episode 1. Dad, welcome to the studio.
Paul, the title, where on earth did you dream that up?
Hot Stuff Coming Through.
Yeah, because it's got a very, well, it's just...
It's sensual. It's salacious.
Yeah.
It's soporific. It's actually a reference to The Simpsons.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. So basically nothing to do with anything.
Nothing at all.
Love it.
But it's a good, fun name.
And anyway, it's really, really lovely to be back.
Oh, good.
I'm really excited. I've been, you know, thinking about it because I was in the New South Wales Fire Brigades for almost to the day.
Yeah.
10 years.
Which is much, much longer. And I think this is worth pointing out to listeners of Loose Units. Dad was a firefighter much longer than he was a cop. So obviously there's a lot of incredible stuff that would have happened over that full decade. And weirdly, this stuff I remember some of. Because I was too young to remember most of the police stuff. But I distinctly remember... I distinctly remember you coming home at the end of shifts during the... There was a big spate of very serious bushfires in the early 90s.
Yeah, the 1994 bushfires were pretty full on.
And I remember you coming home in the big, like, the high-vis yellow kind of, firefighting suit covered in charcoal. The smell of fires was a big part of my
youth. Yeah, no, it really gets into your clothing and it's very powerful.
Why did you join the fire brigade?
Well, as the listeners may recall, I at the end of the last season, that sort of carryover session we did when I was working for WorkCover, there was that situation where I went to the window and looked down and there was this amazing fire where this church, sort of a cathedral at the top of George Street in Sydney was well alight, and there were numerous aerial appliances, meaning platforms, ladders. You know, it was a really, really big production. I was looking down and I just realised that I was sick to death of public service mentality, and I thought, "Wow, there's a job that I'd really like to do."
I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, if you'd looked down and seen anything else, would you have done it? Like, what was it about the actual fire that grabbed your eye?
Well, it was the camaraderie, the excitement, the adrenaline. You know, the teamwork, the fact that someone had lit that fire. And this particular person was actually going around. He had a bit of a problem with organised religion, so he was setting fire to numerous churches in Sydney.
Really?
Yep.
But hang on, how do you know this? Did you run down and ask him what was going on?
No, he'd long gone.
Yes,
what I'm saying. Being an arsonist. Although that brings up an interesting point.
Well, we can do arson. I think we should get to arson later.
Okay.
Because, God, that's an interesting topic. There are so many areas of the fire brigade that are really unique and distinct, and arson's one of them. But I actually wanted to ask you, what were your interactions with the fire brigade and with fires before you were a firefighter? Well, so, like, when you were a cop?
Yeah, well, we'd go to fires, obviously, because, you know, there'd be traffic control. And then when I was in forensics, we'd go in and... Remember that great story I told you about how we'd get the sample of air by pouring out the...
Yes!
...the container of water? Thanks. So I was involved. I went to lots of fires. But it was always, hours, days, sometimes weeks later. But then I got thinking, wow, this is... Because, you know, I missed the emergency services.
Yeah.
And I was in bed a few nights ago, and I'd always thought that I'd always wanted to sort of... I'd considered the ambulance, like, to become a paramedic.
Yeah.
And then I had this really weird idea that maybe I could be the first person maybe in Australia to have done the three services, police, fire and ambulance. And I'd kind of was a bit disappointed, and I'd considered becoming a paramedic quite seriously.
Mm.
And then I remembered that I was a member of St. John's Ambulance when I was in my teens.
So technically you did.
So I have. So, and I was into it big time.
So you got the, because I know they have the Emmy, the Grammy, the Oscar and the Tony, which is called the EGOT in Hollywood.
Mm.
So the big goal of most celebrities in Hollywood is to get one of those four.
Mm.
What you're saying is you've got the EGOT of emergency services.
Well, you know, I really have done the three of them.
Mm.
And look, I'd like to just say this front and center right now at the beginning of this season, that in case any listeners out there are thinking, wow, you know, like Australia's been burning, we've received a lot of publicity internationally.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of tragedies. There was that terribly sad situation with the three American pilots that they were doing water bombing a few weeks ago in the Snowy Mountains, and their plane crashed. And I'll never forget, you know, the 9-year-old son being presented with the award.
Yeah.
It was really depressing. But I want to stress here and now that you and I have been talking about this. This has been in the planning for well over a year.
Yeah.
Long before.
Yeah, I think I agree. We aren't trying to capitalize upon the tragedy.
That would make me feel really uncool.
No, the plan was always to go from the police to the work cover authority and then into the fire brigade.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And what I'd like to do in this season, Paul, is because I figure that 10 years, I'm pretty well, I feel as though I've got some street cred in terms of what it's like to be a firefighter.
Yes.
So what I would like to do on this journey, I mean, there'll be some stories down the track that are so fucked up, they're so bad, they're diabolically horrendous.
Right.
And in fact, I'd go so far to say that some of them are as bad as the worst of the worst in the police series.
Christ.
I know that sounds terrible. And I'd actually, I really had to dig deep into my memory to sort of, because I'd really buried these stories deeply. In fact, I was actually concerned whether or not we'd have enough material.
Now, this happened with the police force stuff as well, but what happens with you is, like you said, you bury these things deep so that they don't affect you. And listeners will regularly get in touch and say, is John okay? Is this stuff affecting him?
Mm.
But, I mean, this was a long period of your life. And you were doing other things whilst you were a firefighter.
Mm.
But unlike with the police force, you didn't have mum around because mum didn't make the jump across to the fire brigade. So this was just a John solo thing that you went off and did. When you enrolled in the fire brigade...
Well, that's where I'd like to sort of start.
Yeah, but I was going to ask, how did mum feel about it?
Look, she's always just been one in the background to be really, really happy if I'm happy.
Right.
And she knows that I love... you know, adrenaline.
Mm.
In fact, when I first met Christine, I'd just stopped skydiving and she sensed that I was missing it. And she said to me one day, look, let's drive down to Wilton. And I drove onto the drop zone and I sort of stood around and I just thought, no, that's a part of my life. I've moved on from that.
Right.
I thought from a responsibility point of view, some might say, well, you didn't want to jump out of planes again, but then you wanted to be a policeman and a fireman, and they are dangerous jobs.
Yeah.
The fire brigade is particularly dangerous. But because it's dangerous, you're aware of the danger, and I think that makes you more vigilant in terms of what can happen.
Sure.
But look, let's come back to the process.
Yes.
So what I'd like to do is take people on a journey and give them a lot of behind-the-scenes stories.
Yeah.
I want the listeners to feel as though they are traveling with me and they get a real sense of like what it's like to be in the back of a fire engine under siren at 2 in the morning.
It's like a ride along for the listeners.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, okay, let's say there are listeners out there who are thinking, okay, I want to join the fire brigade. Now, obviously, you joined, you know, decades ago, but what was the application process like?
The process to become a firefighter in New South Wales, that's a permanent firefighter with the, it used to be called the New South Wales Fire Brigade.
Yes.
It's now called New South Wales Fire and Rescue.
Okay.
I had to wait for an ad to appear in the press, so I waited for a few months.
Yeah.
So I stayed working, obviously, with work cover, bored out of my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically the ad was, you know, appeared in the local press and apply, and everyone gets to sit for the initial entrance examination. So that particular year in New South Wales, they required 110 firefighters.
Right.
For the entire year, which basically means you'd have 10 people in every class. The first day, I was told to report to, the day of the exam.
Yes.
I had to report out at New South Wales University, NIDA, you know, the National Institute of Dramatic Arts.
I went to university there.
Yep. Well,
wow.
Well, at NIDA, they that's where you basically went. And I remember I caught a cab and I saw this queue that went for about a kilometre, mainly men standing around. And I didn't know that that queue had anything to do with what I was about to do. And I got to the front of the queue.
And it was, you accidentally then, auditioned for Macbeth.
Yeah. Anyway.
Sorry, the Scottish play.
Yeah. So when I got to the front of this queue, I was told somewhat unceremoniously that this was the queue for the IQ test, you know, the initial test for the fire brigade, and to go to the back of the queue. So I had to walk to the back of the queue.
Was that part of the test? Did you fail the test by going to the back of the queue?
No. I went to the back of the queue, and then we all went into this huge auditorium, this massive, massive room, and we all sat down at these individual tables. They handed out. They had a lot of uniformed firemen, mainly officers, that were there to make sure people didn't cheat. Although I do know that in earlier years, sometimes they used to get other people to go and sit for their exams. Like, they'd get current firefighters that were friends,
right,
and they'd go in and sit. But this particular time, they'd got around that by, you had to have a photograph, and, you know, they checked you out really, really, because there was a fair bit of sort of that cheating going on. It's regarded, I'm not sure about internationally, but I know that in Australia, it's regarded as an incredibly desirable job.
Right.
To get into.
Right.
And so we all sit down. It was a two-hour exam, and it was really, really difficult. Full-on IQ test. So the thing with IQ tests is they start off really, really basically, and they sort of lull you into a false sense of security,
like,
and you're going,
this is just, yeah, is this an apple or an orange?
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. And then, you know, one of the classics, they wanted to test your skills out in terms of your motor skills, your reasoning skills. And one of the classic things that I remember, they would have a drawing of a pedal, and then at the end of this drawing, sort of over to the right, you'd have a reaction, so that if you put your foot down on the pedal, but what you had to do with your eyes, you had to follow all the gears and levers, and then that in turn would enable you to figure out in your mind, by depressing a pedal, what reaction there would be at the very end.
Okay.
And you couldn't guess the reaction. You actually had to use your brain and eyes simultaneously, funnily enough, to figure out, are you with me? Sort of.
Yeah, kind of. It was like a maze.
Not really. You had to follow it like a maze, but it was a matter of, if you didn't concentrate, you would not know whether this thing at the end of this contraption would go up or down.
Okay.
And then another classic is you would have a river.
Yeah.
And you would have a boat in the middle of the river with a rope attached, and you had to drive a tent peg into the soil on the bank, and then you'd tie off the boat. You're laughing, Paul.
It sounds like you're taking a bong hit.
No, hear me out.
This is so fucking absurd.
No, it's fascinating. The thing is that what you had to do, you had to figure out what was the strongest angle. You were given lots and lots of angles of a tent peg into soil, and you had to figure out which would be the likely peg at a certain angle that would be the strongest to hold onto this boat in the river.
And what are the practical applications of the...
Fuck knows.
Okay.
To see how the brain works, I guess. Oh. I mean, I'm not a designer of these tests.
It sounds like they're not either. But
no, but here's the thing. During this exam, I was so aware that of 22,000 people they were going to accept 110. So it's effectively one of the most incredibly difficult jobs to get into.
Uh-huh.
And I was really, really focused. I was so focused that a guy to my right collapsed.
Wait, you made him collapse with your focus? Are you Professor X?
Paul. Paul. A guy to my right, he may have had a heart attack.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And he collapsed on the floor next to me, and for a split second, because I've had resuscitated people prior to being a fireman,
yeah,
and you know, it's a natural human reaction to go and help.
Did you?
No. I just glanced at him and thought, oh, fuck it. But and I kept going with my test.
I mean, did someone not consider that a fail?
No way. I didn't care about anything that day. I was so focused on doing well in this exam.
Right.
So my point is, a guy collapses next to me. It may well have been. I don't recall the entire incident, but you know, obviously there were lots of people around in terms of officers that came and assisted, and he was taken away on a stretcher.
Huh.
Now he obviously, well, I don't think he got into the fire brigade. In fact, I don't even know whether he lived. But this point is to juxtapose the whole point about that's how serious it was in terms of getting into the brigade.
Uh-huh.
So I finished the tests,
mm-hmm.
of which there were numerous. And, you know, they covered literacy, numeracy, reasoning, logic, yeah. many, many things.
Compassion, you failed that, obviously.
Failed compassion, yeah. dismally, but I didn't care.
Well, you wouldn't.
Because I was very focused, as I said.
Yeah.
So I waited for months, and months went by. And then I received notification from the Board of Fire Commissioners, I've still got the letter,
uh-huh.
saying, congratulations, you are now able to come and sit for the next set of tests.
Whoa. It's just like the real NIDA. It's just auditions. Mm. So what did the next set of tests entail?
Okay, well, they were at Alexandria, which is the old training college,
mm-hmm.
which actually has a station attached to it as well, an actual fire station.
Mm.
And it's got an amazing big tower where they light fires and, yeah, they sort of simulate all sorts of things that will happen in a real fire.
Yeah.
Okay, so there are a couple of things about being a firefighter, particularly in a city. You're going to be dealing with heights a lot, okay? So you know how every fire engine carries a ladder,
yes.
on top? That will get to around about maybe up to, say, 4 stories,
right.
3 to 4 stories, which is really, really high.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It's a massive ladder. So what they did, they rigged a ladder up, and you're all civilians, and you're just going out there, and you had to climb up this ladder, and then you had to lock one of your legs in between the rungs,
yep.
just one leg,
uh-huh.
and then you had to lean out backwards with both arms sort of spread-eagled like that.
That's terrifying.
And you know, it's the sphincter. My sphincter was oscillating rapidly.
Sure.
Because you're thinking something's driving you because you really, really, really want to, you know, succeed.
Or it's the air being propelled out of your oscillating sphincter.
Mm. And there were people below sort of monitoring everything, and they're very... you know, switched on. I don't recall whether or not we were given a safety, whether there was a safety line.
Hang on, what year was this?
89.
Okay, it's 89. I'm guessing there were no safety nets.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
And then you had to do this lean. And then another thing you had to do was you had to tie a rope around an axe and drag the axe up the ladder. Because that's how they used to get axes and equipment. Up a ladder.
Plus,
like if you'd climb up a ladder, then you might have to use an axe to, say, smash a window or something. So you had to be able to get this, whatever it was, this equipment. You might have to tie the end of a hose,
yeah.
a branch, it's called a branch, which back in the early days they were made of copper or brass.
Uh-huh.
So there are lots and lots of things that where you would need to use a rope. So you're doing all that sort of stuff. The next test was they took you into a very big, like a, well, let's say a fairly big room, like a small warehouse.
Yeah.
And inside the warehouse was this amazing maze made up of like a wire cage maze, compartmentalized into numerous tunnels.
Yep.
And they would, so you had a start and an end, and they'd put you into a fully encapsulated suit.
Yeah.
With a mask, so you're very, very claustrophobic.
Mm-hmm.
They would then blank out your visor.
What?
Yep, so you couldn't see. They would guide you, so they're sort of holding you and they'd help you get the entrance to this maze.
Yeah.
Which was very, very, very claustrophobic. It was black and you had to find your way to the exit by going through this maze.
Right.
Crawling.
Crawling?
Yep. You couldn't stand up. Now, that particular test was, fortunately, I'd done a lot of scuba diving, a lot of cave diving, a lot of night diving, and irresponsibly, I used to do a lot of night diving in Sydney Harbour by myself with no gauges. So I actually would just suck the last breath out and then go up. It was insane.
Yep.
But that's another lot of stories. So I kind of find, when I'm in that situation, like with the blanket over me,
yeah.
I find it really cozy. No, I do. I find it really, I can really chill,
right.
Which is really important because you don't want to sort of, but a lot of people get claustrophobia and they just freak out. Now, if you'd freak out during this whole process,
mm-hmm.
obviously they'd drag you out and you didn't get in.
Right.
So I made my way through the maze comfortably, got out. And then the next thing you had to do, they set up a mannequin that weighed probably in kilos from memory. I would say this mannequin weighed maybe 60 kilo.
Okay.
And you had to put him, I assume it was a male. Actually,
60 kilos is probably a woman.
Yeah. Well, it was pretty heavy. And you had to drag this mannequin a certain distance in a certain time.
Right.
Just these are all strength tests. So they're doing height, fear of heights, claustrophobia, strength.
Mm-hmm.
You've already done all your IQ tests. And
so they want you to be smart, strong, resourceful, fast, all that other stuff. Okay. Right.
Yeah. They want you to be. I won't say superhuman, but, you know, they want you to be really, really capable. Because as the listeners will become aware, once we get into the whole story, you know, being a firefighter is, there's a lot of gear that you wear. And what they did, you know, did all the tests that day, then you go home for a few more months. And then...
And wait.
And you're just waiting.
Do you stay in shape over that period?
Oh, did I stay in shape? I went swimming every single night.
Yeah.
I did a lot of walking, running, soft sand running, and I really, really, really was so focused. It was my whole goal to really get into the fire brigade. I thought it was... because I knew that if I didn't get in, I'd be destined to become a, you know, a public servant.
Or a mall cop.
Oh, honestly, so depressing.
How many police do you think head off into other emergency services?
Like, oh, quite a few.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
So do you think you're much more likely to get into, say, the fire brigade if you've spent time in the police force, for example?
No.
Really?
Irrelevant. You really? Can be a police officer. Plenty of police have failed
right.
to get into the fire brigade. Plenty. Plenty of everyone. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter who or what. It's just you have to really, you've got to be very single-minded, but you've got to have a lot of attributes. And the thing is that they're always changing the goalposts, so you don't always know what they're looking for this particular year.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Okay.
But
in 89, you've done your secondary, you know, round of, I guess, auditions at this weird, you know, fiery Hogwarts with all its obstacle courses.
Mm.
So when that was done...
Then I went home and, you know, we were living in on the Northern Beaches.
Yes.
You and Anne were little kids.
Do you remember where we were living?
Yep, in Wheeler Heights, in Greystoke Street.
Wow. So Mark wasn't born yet at that point, was he?
No.
Okay.
In fact, well, he was born in 89.
He was born in 89.
So he was a really tiny, well, obviously tiny, he'd just been born. But, yeah, he was a little thing. And you would have been, what year were you born? 83?
I'm just watching you with horror.
Fuck.
83.
Okay, cool. So you are six.
Well, okay. Here's a question, and I'm sure this has occurred to some listeners. Two kids, little kids, another one on the way. Did that in any way affect or impede your willingness to join a dangerous job? Did
no.
it ever even occur to you that it was, you know?
No. I don't know what the listener's going to think, but I hope the listeners, and they hopefully know me really quite well by now, in that, you know, I'm a straight shooter. I'm honest. And if I'm being honest, yes, I'm aware that I've got a young family, but I also am aware that I'm going to be working for a long time.
Yeah.
I miss emergency services. There's no way on earth that I'm going to rejoin the New South Wales Police Force.
Mm-hmm.
Funnily enough, the reason I didn't want to is that all my friends,
yeah,
they'd sort of become, they'd gone through the ranks of the police force. And I couldn't handle going back and starting off
from the beginning.
The beginning and just being lowly is not the right word. But, you know, can you imagine being a probationary constable?
Again.
You know, 11 years after.
Yeah.
It'd just be, you know, and I just couldn't do it. And I thought, no, I need to sort of reinvent things. And the fire brigade seemed like a possibility.
Right.
Anyway, months and months later. And the thing is, you're continually training. And because it means nothing that I'd already got to that stage. Mm. You can be cut off at any time. You know, the government might say, all right, we're freezing funding. We don't need any more firefighters. A couple of months later, I got an official letter, which I've still got, from Board of Fire Commissioners. And their logo was in red, which is quite appropriate.
Mm.
And it said, congratulations, you've now progressed to the third stage. Now, the third stage,
Jesus.
Fuck me, it was called the PAT test. And you had to go into Elizabeth Street in the city, into a sort of a 30-story skyscraper.
Yep.
Had no idea, zero idea how to prepare myself. You just knew you had to be incredibly fit. You go into this office and there's a lot of preliminary medical checks, hearing tests, and everything's fairly cool. Then you go into this room and, as God is my witness and all the fireys listening to this, this will sort of bring back memories. They had this... I can only describe it as like a set of kind of monkey bars with, it was like a wooden, fairly complex, hollow sort of wooden cube,
uh-huh.
but with lots and lots of rails at different heights.
How big was this thing?
It was in an office. Isn't that weird? Like on the 15th floor or something, in a normal carpeted office, is this structure.
Yeah.
And you were given incredibly detailed instruction. So it was incredibly physically demanding, but also mentally challenging. And what you had to do, and they explained it in very minor, sort of minute detail,
mm-hmm.
you had to sort of spring up, feet first, climb through and negotiate and crawl and elevate and pull yourself up. And you're doing this incredibly complicated, and it was mentally quite challenging just to remember what to do.
Yeah.
And you had to do this incredible, almost sort of an aerial ballet. But once you'd finished it, you had to do it again and again and again. And they were timing you.
Right.
And you had to do it within a certain period of time, a certain number of times, the correct way. And that's always been regarded amongst people that I know that did that as being pretty full on.
You were holding your hands about a foot apart, but I'm guessing this thing was as big as the room?
It was as big as this. It was as big as this studio.
Okay. So
it was this incredible. I mean, who thought of that? It's just unbelievable. But it was testing dexterity, strength, ability to remember.
Adapt.
Yeah. To remember complex instructions.
Uh-huh.
And so I did all that. And then a couple of months ago, it must have taken me...
Sounds like a year.
No, it was. It was about a year.
Right.
1 year. And then finally, I get this incredible letter. Congratulations, John. The Board of Fire Commissioners has recommended that you be... able to start a career with the New South Wales Fire Brigades, please report to Alexandria.
Right.
On a certain day, would have been a Monday, and obviously in civilian clothes. That was the beginning. Wow, that was the beginning of 10 years. And while I was at the academy, the training college, they called it, you basically were there for 12 weeks, and there were only 10 people.
So you and nine other people at this training academy for 10 weeks.
Mm.
What are you doing during those 10 weeks? Because it sounds like what they did was expect you to already know a lot of the skills you would need before you even enrolled. So what the hell are they teaching you over those 10 weeks?
Okay, well, actually, they don't expect you to know anything.
Okay.
They just they bring you in. They need to sort of mold you in a certain way. You know, you don't want to have any preconceived ideas about firefighting. Look, I actually, funnily enough, I actually forgot one of the most important things about joining the fire brigade.
Okay.
And that is that you also had to go before a panel interview of three people.
Right.
And that consisted of a public servant, a senior fire brigade officer,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes a police officer or someone that they'd brought in. And that was pretty intense as well. And I think that interview went for between 20 and 30 minutes. I don't know how I forgot about that, but that was another part of the process.
Do you know what stage that was at?
I think it may have been the final stage.
Yeah,
I'd say that's stage four.
Okay.
Prior to getting in.
Okay. But and these 10 weeks.
Yeah, well, it could have been longer. It could have been 12 weeks. But you sort of, I mean, I'd not had any experience with real fire.
Oh, yeah, this is completely worth mentioning. I mean, you've obviously dealt with, I mean, people who've listened to the podcast or read Loose Units, the book, will know about the case of the witch. And I mean, obviously you dealt with crimes in which people were burned.
Mm.
But
and then there was that time when I was in my early teens when I set fire to a waterfall with petrol.
Have we talked about that before? Because that seems like that may have... Did that come up in the interview? The fact that you were a burgeoning arsonist?
No, not the sort of thing to talk about. But I don't want to sort of sit here and go, you know, fire is fascinating. But I mean, how many people listening, how many people in the world are not captivated if it's a nice cold night and you're sitting watching the flames come from a fire?
Yeah.
Just licking the black air. It's so beautiful. It's hypnotic. It's something very primal that comes out. Fire is really, really important and has been so. You know, it enables us to cook food, it gives us warmth, and it's a bonding experience. And we'll get into that later on in future podcasts about what big fires do for firemen. They make you feel like it's just this sense of camaraderie.
Sure.
And it's mighty powerful.
Mm.
And here's a little fun fact that I am going to sort of say right now, and that is that generally speaking, public absolutely love firefighters.
Right.
They love, I mean, look at those great guys in New York, September the 11th, that went into the buildings.
The first responders, yeah.
Everyone else is trying to get out, they're going in.
Here's a fun story. Well, maybe not fun, but it's certainly interesting. One of the first responders who, you know, jumped back into active duty and volunteered for rescue duty was Steve Buscemi. The actor.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he used to be he was a firefighter, and so he just put his stuff back on, ran down to his old firehouse, and started rescuing people and pulling.
That's incredible.
Yeah, incredible guy.
Amazing.
Yeah, and the first responders, obviously, I guess that we are in a time where people are thinking about firefighters and firefighting a lot, and it seems like we get big fires every so often. What was the first? Do you remember the first fire that you put out? Whether it was a practice fire or not. Like, do you remember what it was like to put out a fire for the first time?
Yeah, we did it at the college, obviously. Look, also something really weird. They gave us these weird outfits. Like, they gave us these sort of... they gave us black woolen pants. They gave us knee-high leather boots that were amazing. And, it was just...
Did they let you keep your uniform?
Yeah, you kept it, but... The thing is that when I joined the fire brigade, we used to wear what was called the lion tamer's suit.
Whoa.
I've been trying to dig up some photographs of it. It'll be pretty easy to find, but they were just all black. We wore these white plastic helmets. And I'd been to fires where fireys had come out of a fire and the helmet had melted.
Jesus.
Onto their head.
Christ.
But, yeah, and we had brass buttons.
Yes,
so everything was sort of brass. Everything had to be brassoed, polished. It was very kind of Dickensian.
All right, so let's tell the story of your first fire next week on Hot Stuff Coming Through. Has the name grown on you at all of the podcast, or do you still think it's odd to be calling it Hot Stuff Coming Through?
Well, it sounds like the title of a cheap porn film.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the first episode of Loose Units, Hot Stuff Coming Through. Don't forget to like, subscribe, leave us a review on iTunes. And we will see you next week for more of Dad's time as a firefighter in the New South Wales Fire and Rescue.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.